I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. 10 Democrats took the stage last night in Detroit for the first of two debates in a state that Donald Trump won by fewer than 11,000 votes. Former Maryland governor and presidential candidate Martin O'Malley knows what it's like to be on that debate stage. He joins me with analysis. The president continues to target Baltimore and House Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings. Today, we continue our series Midday in the Neighborhood to hear from people who actually live here about the issues that affect their lives and their communities. Representatives of two neighborhoods in Congressman Cummings' 7th Congressional District talk about what's really going on in our city. LaWanda Edwards from Cold Spring Newtown and Joseph Kane from Edner Gardens Lakeside join me in Studio A. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up in just a bit, we continue our Midday in the Neighborhood series. But first, take one of round two of the Democratic debates took place last night in Detroit. 10 candidates presented an idea-rich array of approaches to healthcare, immigration, and student debt, and they argued about what the best ideological thrust should be to beat President Donald Trump in the general election. Last night's group included Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and former Congressman Beto O'Rourke. Several lesser-known candidates, including former Maryland Congressman John Delaney, Montana Governor John Bullock, and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, John Hickenlooper from Colorado, and Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan made the case for the middle, while others proposed a more progressive agenda. Political newcomer Marianne Williamson also got some face time and some applause. My first guest today is a man who knows exactly what it's like to be on that debate stage. He himself shared it with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in the last presidential primary. Former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley joins me on the phone. He has decided not to run for president this time around, and he has endorsed Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke. Governor, it's good to talk to you.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk with you.
So let's start with the gentleman that you have endorsed, Beto O'Rourke. How do you think he did, and do you think he advanced his cause?
I believe he did. I thought he did very well. I thought he was clear. I thought he was decisive. I thought he had strong answers on the range of questions from health care to immigration. And I also believe that he has the ability to articulate that story of a fearless American future, which I believe is actually the way to defeat Donald Trump. It's not a matter of checking boxes or anybody trying to prove that they were more liberal sooner than somebody else on some issue. It's really about giving the people of the United States the reasons to believe that we can still be the masters of our own future. That is, you know, harness the winds of a fast-changing economy so that our kids enjoy lives that not only have more health and more security, but also greater opportunity. I mean, that's really what it's all about. A candidacy like Trump's can only thrive in a nation that is fearful of the future. We've seen it before in other countries, and sadly, you might have thought we were beyond that in this country, but there's a lot of fear all across the land, and I do believe that Beto O'Rourke is going to be able to articulate in one town after another across Iowa and in New Hampshire that story of a fearless American future. And I think you saw a glimpse of it last night, even though all the time had to be parceled up and divided. I thought he did well.
When you announced in January that you had decided not to pursue the presidency this time around, a couple months later you came out and formally endorsed Beto O'Rourke. Did you have endorsement possibility conversations with other candidates as well, or was Beto O'Rourke always the guy that was sort of in your sights?
Yeah, you know, I endorsed him at the same time that I made the announcement that I wouldn't be running. So that was on the same day.
I thought you were encouraging him then, and then you actually endorsed him a couple months later. Okay, I stand corrected.
No. I endorsed him in the, I said I wasn't running in the same op-ed that ran in the Des Moines Register where I said I would be supporting Beto O'Rourke.
Okay.
So this is, I don't know him as well as I know many of the others, and that's part of the handicap that I bring to this evaluation process. I actually know a lot of these men and women, some of them better than others. I didn't know Beto O'Rourke very well. My eyes focused on him as I saw him put forward that really amazing run for the U.S. Senate against Cruz and nearly win. So I know all of the other candidates in the race, but this is where I came across Beto O'Rourke for the first time. Back in 2000, roughly, I think, 14, we saw the first numbers of refugee children coming over the border from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, fleeing drug gangs and all the murder and horrible parade of things that go along with the collapse of justice institutions in our Central American neighbors' countries. So anyway, at the time, President Obama's White House was asking friendly Democratic governors to help them site juvenile detention centers to hold these refugee children in, you know, in detention centers, camps, internment centers, whatever you want to call it, locked and secured facilities. And I did my very best to persuade the Obama administration and the president that this was a wrong-headed policy. This was not the way to go. They insisted going down this line. Instead, in Maryland, we chose a different path. We greatly expanded foster care programs. We recruited bilingual parents that were willing to be foster parents, trained them, and called upon faith leaders to help us in this recruitment effort. And, Tom, we accommodated about 8,000 kids without missing a beat. And yes, they had to put up their case for asylum and due process and all of that, but in the meantime, they were held in homes and not in detention camps. That's a long story to say that there was only one congressman that backed me up and backed Maryland up when we split with the president on that and in our party, and it wasn't a congressperson from Maryland. It was Beto O'Rourke from El Paso. So he has the heart and the principle and the courage of his convictions, and what America wants right now is to be told that truthful story of what our choices are today in order to move to a better tomorrow. And I think he'll be able to do that, especially when you consider coming from a state that was oil rich and a leader in the last industrial revolution. I think he's able to give voice to the truth that we're at the dawning of a third industrial revolution. And the leading energy of this one is not fossil fuels, it's renewable energy. And you also see Texas leading the way on that. I think 24% of their energy now comes from wind, and most of it's from West Texas. So that's how I came to Beto O'Rourke. Did I talk to other candidates? Sure. Over the passage of time, I know many of them very well. What I heard loud and clear out across the country in my work in the midterms was not only that yearning for that story of a fearless American future, but I also heard a yearning for new leadership. And I believe Beto O'Rourke is best able to bring, his considerable talents to filling that bill for our country right now.
You know, I heard
speaking in a broad way.
I heard Gloria Borger, and I've heard others say this, Gloria Borger, a reporter for CNN, that debates are all about friction and moments. It seemed to me, watching last night, that there weren't any moments the way they were, for example, when Senator Harris confronted former Vice President Biden about busing. Do you buy that as a debate, as a person with debate experience, when you were on that stage yourself, were you looking for some sort of, soundbite moment? Were you going into those endeavors with that in mind, hoping to come out of it with something that was going to be, played ad nauseum and go viral? Is that an aspiration that you would recommend to any of the candidates this time around?
Yeah, look, that's a great question, which we should unpack over a beer sometime. There are many, as you might imagine, I've given a lot of thought to those debates and that race. Look, I think you do want to create a breakthrough moment. That breakthrough moment doesn't necessarily have to come at the expense of going for the jugular of one of your opponents, though.
Do you think anybody had one last night?
No, I don't. I didn't see any of that jugular sort of stuff. I think people were trying to use the time allotted to them to make their case about why they should be our next president. Hopefully, as the process goes on, candidates will shift from introducing themselves to instead putting us, you period S, at the center of the stories they tell, our country, each of us.
And there's
a tension, though, and your question goes right to it. There's a tension between what makes good ratings and what's entertaining and what makes for informative public discourse.
And I think, you know, to the Democrats' credit, there was a lot of substantive discussion of issues last night. I don't think anybody can deny that, you know, a lot of different topics came up and there were some, you know, very differing perspectives on many of them. You worked very hard for candidates on down ballot races in the midterms. How do you assess this tension, this conflict between the progressive side of the Democratic Party and the more moderate side, which we certainly saw a little of last night in the debate? Do you think, in fact, that the Democrats are skewing too far left? Is that a valid assessment and an argument that worries you?
Yeah, I don't. I've never found that sort of left-right thing to be as helpful in understanding a changing world as we find it helpful in analyzing the last election. In other words, I mean, sometimes in the last presidential campaign, people would ask me, are you to the left or to the right of Hillary and Bernie? And I would answer, I'm to the forward of them. Hmm. In other words, being of a different generation, I tend to arrive at some issues a lot sooner than they do, whether that's gun control or whether that's repealing the death penalty or whether that's immigration reform. I was moving our country to 100% renewable energy. I was out in front of both of them on those issues. I don't think that makes me necessarily more to the left of Bernie Sanders, a self-described socialist, but it does make me more forward of him. And so look, the tension I saw out around the country is really generational. I saw a tension between younger candidates coming up, claiming that mantle of new leadership, and sometimes in deep blue areas, claiming it against Democratic incumbents. I did not see it. I traveled. I was in 30 states for probably upwards of around 140 candidates when those 2 years came to a close. And you know what, Tom? I never once met a self-described Democratic socialist. I take that back. I met a young student at Kent State in a red T-shirt who described himself as a Democratic socialist. But I never met a candidate who described themselves that way. Albeit I was campaigning in areas we were winning back from Republicans, not in places that were already solidly Democratic. So I think the tension is generational, not ideological. And it's also a tension of a way of governance that is far more entrepreneurial, that is, ask the question of does it work, does it serve, does it deliver better results, rather than ideological, rather than being driven by ideologies of the past.
Mm-hmm. Just got a minute left before I know we have to let you go. What do you make of the geographic argument that some of the candidates are making? We have a congressman from Ohio, a senator from Minnesota, a governor from Montana, saying that they are best positioned to capture that, you know, middle heartland vote that in some instances went to Donald Trump the last time. Beto O'Rourke himself said, hey, don't forget about Texas with its electoral vote, tally, which is quite substantial. Do you think that's going to play into anything here?
Yeah, I think that's a part of things. I've been making a number of calls to friends I made in Iowa on behalf of Beto O'Rourke, and certainly high on their minds, and most of the people, as you might imagine, if I'm asked to call them, are as yet undecided. Very high in their minds is the importance of putting up a candidate who can actually beat Donald Trump. And a part of that is geography. I mean, we haven't had the ability to put Texas into play on the national electoral map for many years. But right now, in the poll I saw yesterday, Beto O'Rourke is the only candidate in our field that, you know, is beating Donald Trump in Texas. So I think geography is a part of it. But I think most fundamentally, it's about giving voice to that new story, that story that says tomorrow can be better than today. Global economy, immigration, climate change. We don't have to look at all of these things as things that are happening to us and turning us as a nation into a fear-filled, you know, band of victims. Instead, we can look at these things as things that are happening for us, and as our parents and grandparents did, you know, face the future with a strong country at our back and shoulder to shoulder with one another, and make this change work for our kids and our grandkids. Give them a better and fuller lives. I mean, that's what it means to be an American, and that's the message that people are yearning to hear, and that's why I'm supporting Beto O'Rourke.
One other quick question, and that has to do with the two leading candidates from last night, if the polls are to be believed, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. They seem to be somewhat in allegiance with each other last night, representing the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. How do you parse the differences between those two candidates?
How do I parse the differences between them? I don't know. I think Bernie Sanders is a Democrat in a few months out of every 4 years that it suits him, and Elizabeth Warren is a Democrat every month of the year. So that's one big difference. In terms of, I would also think that I would think that Elizabeth Warren has a better understanding of capitalism than Bernie Sanders does.
Governor Martin O'Malley, and he's also a former mayor of the city of Baltimore, ran for president in 2016. He has since campaigned for and advised Democratic candidates running for state and local office around the country. Governor, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
The second group of Democratic hopefuls will debate tonight at 8 o'clock on CNN. We'll have more analysis of both debates on midday Friday during the midday news wrap with Julie Bykowitz of The Wall Street Journal and Franco Ordonez of NPR. Coming up after a short break, our Midday in the Neighborhood series continues with a look at Edner Gardens Lakeside and Cold Spring Newtown. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.